What do you call two guys that were there when this happened?
Back to return at Spurlock. Michael Spurlock at the 10. He's to the 20. He's to the 25. Spurlock 30 to the 40-yard line. We could see history. 50, 40 to the 30-yard line. Yeah. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. There you go.
And that.
Shotgun set. Three receivers left. Here's the snap, and the blitzer is picked up. Brady underneath. Caught ball, Evans. He has the record at the 11-yard line. Mike Evans becomes the first NFL player in league history to record 1,000 yards or more in his first seven seasons, and what a throw by Brady. Congratulations, Mike Evans.
Who can forget?
Gannon looking again. Throws up the middle. That's intercepted at the 30. Derrick Brooks, 30. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Derrick Brooks, the most valuable player in the National Football League. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
Here's the snap. Mahomes running to his right. Look out. He may run. Mahomes directly. Oh, toward the end down. Battle. Intercepted. Picked off at the end zone. Bucks are going to beat the Chiefs. We're the champions of the world, and we still have a minute 33 to go. Devin White. What a great second season. That's it for KC. Bucks are the Super Bowl champs. They can't stop the clock.
We call them the Salty Dogs.
Welcome, everybody, to the Salty Dogs podcast. I am Scott Smith.
I am Jeff Ryan.
We are the Salty Dogs.
Very salty right now.
Yeah. It's getting hard not to be.
Well,
6 out of 7 losses.
I'm frustrated because I think this is a pretty decent football team, and I'm frustrated because the plays are there. And unfortunately, whatever the reason is, don't know what it is, because if they knew, they'd fix it, right? But it's the play one or two, but that's the game.
The reason it's frustrating to me is that almost every game, I'm seeing some bit of progress.
Yes.
That makes me think, okay, this team's turning the corner.
Yes.
But it doesn't add up to a win.
No.
As an example, in this last game, the running game worked.
Over 100 yards.
And exactly 100 for Rashad, 6.6 yards per carry, explosive plays, which is 10 or more yards.
And that's what you want.
And that's by far, that's the most we've had in any game this year.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell by the fact that we're averaging about 24.3 carries per game that even when it's not working, they are going to stick with the plan to have a balanced offense.
Right. Makes sense.
So you would think that when that offense, when that rushing attack then actually also works, it would really open things up.
Right.
And yet we still only had about 300 yards and 20 points.
Yeah, and, you know, I imagine, you know, Buck fans are frustrated, and you and I right now are a little salty about this. Just imagine Todd Bowles right now, where and I understand what he says when you know, they practice, they see it, and then something goes wrong. That, for him, that has got to be like...
Yeah. Baker said a lot of the same things after the game.
He did.
Where he's like, I believe in this team,
mm-hmm.
and we can do this, but we just keep not making the plays we're supposed to make on game day.
And you see the play developing. You go, oh, my goodness. And then for whatever reason.
I mean, in this game, the really bad one was the Trey Palmer drive.
Yes, which you would think, you know, if you're going to him, he's made some phenomenal catches.
He's had a couple drops. He's made some unbelievable catches.
Yep.
I think that's just something that he's working through as a rookie.
Uh-huh.
I think his future is very bright. But that one hurt a lot because not only did that was at least going to be a first down well into their territory. And just from the way that play looked, he might have broken it the whole way.
I don't know. The way I looked at that play, he'd still be running right now. So, I mean, no, I thought that was a touchdown. I really did. And
it was one of Baker's best throws of the game. I mean, it was on the money and a laser. And
so you say, okay, well, that's only one. You get one interception, so you're thinking, okay, they come in bunches, and sure enough, and the guy that you think has the most sure hands ever who makes the big play, buddy Antoine Winfield Jr.
He got hit. Yes. It's not like it was straight drop.
Yeah. He got it, and then he got blown up.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'd have to look closely to see if he was already bobbling the ball.
But he's so great. I just expect him to make that.
I think he's one of the best three or four players on the team.
I'm sure he laid his head down on his pillow. And he's still feeling it, you know.
That hit?
Yeah, the hit, and I should have held on to it.
Oh, yeah, you always want it, even if it's defensible.
But
you always want it.
Mm-hmm.
You wish you had it back.
But then they get another INT, so they come in bunches.
Yeah, they did. You mean they would have?
They would
have. They did not.
Well, they got two, right. They would have had three, correct.
Wait, what?
Well, didn't Carlton Davis have one?
Yeah, so they had one.
Or was it a fumble? Was it a...
Bucks had one takeaway, that was it.
Really?
Yeah, and then the Colts had two because they got one interception and then the fumble, the strip sack at the end.
So the first one was Carlton Davis's pick?
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking that was later on.
Do you see what movie's on my TV there?
Dumb and Dumber?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
This is a classic.
Oh, Tommy Boy.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
Bees!
I'll give you a story.
Your firearms are useless against them.
I'll give you a story. What's his name? Chris
Farley.
Farley. In Chicago, during a bye week, in Chicago, was coming out of where he's going into the John Hancock Building.
Yeah,
and he come out. He came out the door. He was just. It's like,
what year was this?
Oh,
because
gosh, this had to be
a good. The end part of the end of this movie happens in Chicago, and I'm pretty sure you can see the Hancock Tower.
Yeah, I want to say he goes into a bank. I want to say it was 90. It was in the mid 90s.
What if he was there filming this movie?
Maybe. But it was really funny. It was like, holy smokes, that's him. Yeah.
Well, you say some things while I'm going to look up
when
this movie
was made. Do you remember? Things to remember?
Say some things so that the podcast doesn't stop while I go to IMDb.
You do know that I am the master controller of editing, so you can pause and no one will know that we're stalling.
I know, but I like it to be natural.
And then they go, wow.
It came out in 95, Jeff.
Okay, see, so there you go. It was in that time period.
But they were probably means they were filming it in 94.
Yeah, it was wintertime, though. But
dude, that might have been while they were filming this movie.
I know, crazy, isn't it?
That's cool.
Every time I see him, I think I always remember. And you know what's crazy about it? It was cold, and he came out, and he was just sweating bullets.
Well,
yeah, well, we know why. But that's a whole other story.
So here's the thing with this game. It started out as about as good as you could want.
Oh.
The Bucs have not scored a touchdown on their opening possession all year, and I'm like, okay, this is the time.
Yep.
We've got it.
Right there.
Moved right down the field with little issue. First and goal at the one. First and goal at the one.
Yep.
Quarterback sneak not only doesn't work, but gets Baker injured.
Well, he gets kneed, doesn't he?
He twisted an ankle. I don't know. Maybe he got kneed in the ankle, but that would be weird.
A lot of folks, I heard different people say, oh, what are you doing a quarterback sneak at that point? I don't mind the call.
Come on.
You know, I thought it was a good call.
You can't start judging the calls based on the outcome.
You ever listen to sports talk?
But, Jeff, everybody does quarterback sneaks. It's not unusual. And Baker's a tough guy.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. He could have been rolling out. He could have dropped back to pass and got blindside sacked and got hurt.
That's true.
You can't. Everybody wants to be as good as the Eagles at this quarterback sneak, but then you do it and the guy gets hurt. And now all of a sudden it's a dumb call. Especially because it's first down, so you still have two more plays.
Easy.
Now he gets hurt and has to come out. And then we get a false start penalty, and you're back at the six. So you can't just, you know, the next run was Rashad, and he got like 3 yards, but that wasn't all that helpful for on second and goal from the six. And then kind of just barely missed Trask, you know, didn't quite hook up with Godwin in the corner of the end zone. So now you only get 3 points out of first and goal at the one, which is terrible.
Right.
You committed a penalty, which was the main reason that happened.
Correct.
Then they score the next 17 points.
Yeah.
And I just think that not scoring a touchdown there completely changed the momentum of that
game. I totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, it's just
and it lit up the crowd in Indy.
Yeah, and then the Bucs got back into it.
Yeah,
you know, thanks to Baker and Mike Evans, and they got back into it. But by that point, they had dug. You know, it was a 14-point hole. It's hard to dig out of that.
That's the difference. I've seen teams that would never come back into it, and they keep fighting.
We've seen Bucs teams that have
exactly.
Yeah,
and this team has fight, and this team it does not just stop. I mean, they may make the mistakes, but they don't stop. Which is, you know, that's a big plus.
That's going to be helpful when and if it all comes together.
So close.
Still had the ball with about 2 minutes left.
Yes.
A chance to go down and tie, or if you go for two, maybe win, and then the strip sack happens.
The other side was you had an opportunity to score a touchdown, and you had to settle for 3 points because you needed two scores. And had you score the touchdown there, then you're only fighting for a field goal rather than a touchdown.
And you might be doing it differently.
And so we go back to, this is a, I would say, broken record, but they don't have records anymore.
There's a lot of sayings based on things that don't exist anymore.
Okay. Red zone problems.
Red zone problems.
That's...
Yeah.
All I want for Christmas is the red zone problems to disappear. And if you give me an early Christmas present, I'd be very, very happy.
I'll tell you one that did work, though, was the 1 yard touchdown pass to Mike Evans. And we'll have to rewind a bit in a second, talk about Payne Durham's catch right before that. But I was looking at for some next gen stats to write about, and I found that Here's a curious note about that Mike Evans touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know the one I'm talking about?
No, which one?
First and goal from the one, his first touchdown. First and goal from the one, he ends up wide open in the back left corner.
Uh-huh.
He had 17.1 yards of separation from the nearest defender on a play that was first and goal from the one.
Wow.
According to Next Gen Stats, that's the largest amount of separation at the point of a catch for a touchdown pass that's thrown into the end zone since they've been charting this stuff in 2016.
In my best Gene Deckerhoff voice, wide open.
Yeah, wide open. And if you look at the play, you could see why, because he's got, I think Thomas, I think is his name, mm-hmm. the safety. He's got him lined up over him. He's in the slot, and Payne Durham's split wide. And Mike gives him a little inside move at first and then goes out. You know, you saw the route. He ran out to the corner. And then Payne Durham did a came up one step and did a very shallow slant that not only drew the defender that was lined up over him, but also, which I think was Jalen Johnson, but also that safety that Mike Evans ran by let Evans go, and so both defenders went after Payne Durham.
Right.
And that's why Mike was so freaking wide open.
Do you remember last Salty
Dogs? So that's a bust.
Right. Remember last Salty Dogs, I said Mike was going to have three touchdowns?
Did you?
Do you remember that? And you said, well, if we get three touchdowns, it'll
for
be.
Mike.
Yeah. And
well, we did. We needed one more.
I know. I was so close. I was so close. I was thinking that because I made a note. Oh, I can't wait to brag that I said he would get three because we were talking about him climbing up the charts of how many touchdowns in his career.
It's interesting to note that Payne Durham was in on that play, and he was also the one that made the catch right before then, because Coach Bowles has been saying since we drafted him that because of his size and hands, he should be a good red zone weapon. So right. When we get down there near the goal line, they've been using him.
All right, timeout. We'll finish that thought. And
go ahead.
I want to go back to Mike Evans.
Okay. Go back to Mike Evans.
I thought he scored the touchdown on the one catch where he rolled over and they put him down on the 1 yard line.
Yeah, that was the only catch he had. So.
Okay, Mike.
Oh, Mike.
Mike Evans, when he made a catch, he went down and he didn't hit the ground. He rolled on top of the guy.
Oh, that's right before that was at the end of the first drive.
Yeah, and you could and
they it was close.
Well, it was close, and in fairness, they didn't show the replay in the stadium, so the coaching people couldn't see it. Now, the people up in the booth, I will say this. CBS was really slow on the replay because I have a truck feed, and I was looking to see, you know, what is it? And it was very slow in coming down. Yeah.
That would have been nice.
I want to go back and look at that because the way he rolled over, it was one of those plays where you're not down.
Yeah, if you land on his body, you're not down until your knee or something touches
correct.
The ground or
your
an
hand,
elbow.
Your hand can
you
touch.
You can put a hand down.
Yeah.
You can't put an elbow down, though.
But I want to go back and look at that play. But that would have been.
He also thought he caught a pass going the other direction later in the game. Remember, he caught it, and they called it incomplete.
Right.
Near the left sideline.
Yeah.
And he kept telling them to throw the flag and replay it. I saw the replay, and I
didn't think he caught
it. I get his argument.
Yes.
But I don't think you get that call. If it's called a catch, maybe it stays, but
correct.
It was called not a catch. It was kind of a Bird Emanuel play.
Mm-hmm.
He had the ball. He had the ball before it touched the ground.
Right.
And then the nose of the ball touched the ground. You can actually do that if it doesn't move in your hands.
Right.
But I don't know if you get that call.
Correct, because they called it incomplete.
They'll see the ball at the ground. They'll go, yeah, not a catch.
Yeah.
So I was not surprised we did not throw the flag there, and I can't remember if we
We,
was that the drive where we got the 4th and 10, 19-yard pass to Chris Godwin?
I believe so, yes.
That was quite a play.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't
it? That was a great play. But Baker had some nice throws in that game.
Right, and that goes back to where you see the team, you know, the offense evolving, doing better and better, but it's just
Baker said something after the game, and my tape recorder didn't get it really well, but I wanted to.
What did he say?
I'm going to look it up here.
You're going to look at your transcript to see.
There's a transcript.
Was this when he was just talking?
No, this was at the podium.
Okay. Because.
No. Actually, it was when he was talking to TJ.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't there for his podium interview.
Okay.
Because the elevators there are so slow. Oh, my God. And so I was terrified I didn't have enough time to get up, finish my story, and get back down. I have an elevator story, too. But he said, I can't do it verbatim, and I don't have a transcript of it.
All right.
But it was something to the effect of, we had everything out there. We could do anything. Like he said, they had a lot of things that they knew would work.
Right.
But then how do we end up with, like, just 300 yards and 20 points?
Right.
If everything's working.
Correct.
And I think there was more to the quote, was, you know, like, you know, we just didn't make it happen here or there or whatever. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah. But the thing about, I will say this too about Baker, you know, he's a really smart dude.
Oh, yeah.
But win or lose, he'll do one. He's been very gracious, and not a lot of quarterbacks
do that.
I've
been standing there. I know.
And he talks, and he will answer the question. Yeah. And he's pretty honest.
In this particular case, TJ went up to him in the locker room, mm-hmm. and we were waiting, but he was talking to Dave Canales.
Yeah.
And so we're like, we're not interrupting that.
And TJ made a comment that right now he's talking to one of his coaches, and we're not going to interrupt that.
Wasn't a heated conversation or anything. It's just kind of quietly talking about me. I didn't try to eavesdrop.
But see, that's a respect factor that we have when we are permitted into the locker room early. You have to remember that's their sanctuary, you know, until the door is totally open.
Well, Baker obviously must have agreed before the season that he would do the interview after every game.
I had a great conversation. Well, we did the Salty Dogs with him.
With him.
And so that gave me an opportunity to let him know who I was. And I stopped and I talked to him and I explained to him in the preseason that this is what we would like to do and we have done it. And, you know,
he's done it very graciously every time, no matter what the outcome was.
Correct.
And not given TJ any kind of like side eye or anything. Just as soon as he's ready, he goes, okay, let's go. And then he answers every question.
Right.
I think the people that listen to this podcast are probably the types of Bucks fans who are willing to give Baker a chance.
Sure.
So I don't think
there's
probably not a lot of people screaming at us right now, but I've been so impressed with him overall, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything here. We're 4-7. Baker's been good. He hasn't been a superstar. He's definitely not the reason we're 4-7.
Right. And I had a conversation with someone. They were talking about, I'm tired of his passes getting batted down.
That's happened a handful of times.
The dude that was doing it was like 6'7". He was
Was it DeForest Buckner?
Yeah, I mean,
he's huge.
I mean, you know, it happens. But, you know, all quarterbacks are throwing through a lane.
Yeah.
So
I think the person's point is probably that Baker's 6 foot even, I think.
Yeah. Well, 6'1", I think it says.
Which is a little below average for an NFL quarterback. So he may have a harder time potentially getting the ball over the line in certain situations.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, has that really been that big of a problem? Of course, and you don't want any passes batted down.
No.
But they happen.
Yeah.
It's not a chronic issue.
Nope.
He's still able to use the middle of the field, which he has done.
He did.
So,
listen, he's a gamer, and he'll take off and run, which every time he does it, I go, oh. But the fact that...
Well, he ran over a guy in his last game.
He did. And what I liked what he said after in the locker room, someone asked him about playing with his ankle and everything, and mm-hmm. he said adrenaline.
It's quite a drug. Yeah. He'd already mentioned the adrenaline,
uh-huh.
and then somebody came back to him and says, you were even able to like roll out and run around. He goes, right. Adrenaline's quite a drug.
Well, you know, it's funny, we were talking about what the difference was going to be with Baker because he wasn't rolling out in the beginning, you know, after he first got hurt, he wasn't rolling out right away.
Yeah.
And then as the game was going on, we were thinking, wow.
He said it loosened up.
And then all of a sudden we were like, boy, you know, this makes it a little bit harder because he can't roll out. What does he do? Next play, he rolls out. Well, that answered that question.
He made a couple nice rollout plays. Mm-hmm. I like those plays. I knew that was something that we were going to do with Dave Canales, and that's one of the reasons we liked Baker mm-hmm. as a choice to be our next starting quarterback or to come here and compete for the job.
Right.
We didn't really get back to the Payne Durham catch.
No.
I think that's worth highlighting.
I think so, too. Sorry.
According to NFL Next Gen Stats, that play had a 25.3% chance of being completed.
That is unreal.
When the ball was thrown, I was very concerned it was going to be intercepted. Mm-hmm. Payne just basically got over the guy and took it away from him.
Yes.
And then kind of spun and lunged towards the goal line. That's a great play, man.
And that's not a rookie play. That's a veteran play.
Well, that's just a guy with some specific talents. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
Tight ends have been playing well.
It's not a position we're getting a huge amount out of, but it seems like KDOT gets one like 22, 24-yard play down the seam in every game. He had one again this week.
Yeah.
Ended up with 4 for 45. And if you add in Payne, that means our tight ends gave us 5 for 57. It doesn't mean they're featured part of the passing attack, but they're doing enough.
Right.
Right. I mean, this game was a lot of Mike Evans.
Oh, yeah.
Not much Rashad in the passing game. Mm-hmm. He only had 2 catches, but he was running well.
Very much so. Very much so. And there was a question mark on his health, so I would say props to him.
Rashad?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he just had a little bit of a sore knee.
Sure. But still, I mean, we all say that, a little bit of a sore knee. It's not a big deal. It's not going to bother me at all. It's all good to go. But, yeah, the frustration of just three more plays. You just,
yeah, and gosh. So you get things that you weren't getting, like a good rushing attack, like great third down defense, 2 for 11. Unfortunately, after three of those, they got it on fourth down.
Right.
So it's a tad bit misleading. But good, you know, things that have been hurting us before. Can't run the ball.
Right.
Can't stop teams on third down. Can't stop third and long for some reason. All those things were fine.
Right.
And the third down defense has actually been pretty good. And the third down long problem has gone away for the last 4 weeks. Over the last 4 weeks, the Buccaneers are sixth in the league on defense in third down rate allowed. So you get those things resolved. And then you, for the first time all season, you give up a touchdown off of a turnover.
Yeah.
Did you know that was the first time all year? So Baker threw the pick. They got a touchdown on that drive.
Yep.
So one of the most amazing strengths that the Bucs had had through 10 games, not allowing a single touchdown off turnovers,
right.
And then that becomes your problem.
Right.
So you just can't put it all together. And you know the things you have to fix, and you fix some of them, and then something else crops up.
And there's no answer, because if there was, it would be fixed. And it's you know, you hear communication, you hear concentration, you hear, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the game. I mean, that's what kind of happens, you know. You're going to have drop balls. You're going to have offsides. You're going to have, however, the one offsides on Stenny, I thought was questionable.
Really?
But that's just me.
You mean false start?
Yeah.
Which could any of this have to do with the fact that this roster is a lot younger than we've had in recent years?
There you go.
And it's kind of a transitioning thing. I don't want to talk transition, because we're one game out of first, and we can still make the playoffs.
That was the next thing I was going to say. But yes, no, I think that's what happens is everyone forgets that this was supposed to be one of those years, and the team is playing. It started out playing really well, and then we're struggling. However, the only game I felt like they weren't totally in it was the Eagles game. But then later on, you thought maybe. But
yeah, like the San Francisco game, the score doesn't look great, but they were in that game.
Yeah, I mean, you look
they weren't overwhelmed like they were a year before.
Correct. And then you look at the Atlanta game, frustration. The Houston game, frustration.
Buffalo.
I mean, that
you could have won that if Chris turns around 1 second earlier.
Right.
There's a lot of what it could have. Yeah. That's every team that doesn't
win
its goal.
Yes.
At the end of the season, goes back and can go back and go, well, if we'd have just done this and this and this, it's you can't, unfortunately.
No.
So it really is kind of irrelevant.
But I do like the fact that as you said, the offense is showing promise. Things are improving. You're starting to see it. It's almost there, but it's not. And I think that's what's frustrating the coaches, is that it's so close. And hopefully it clicks this Sunday, because as you stated previously, out of all the craziness, one game out of
it. I hate saying it, too.
I know.
I really do, because
it
makes it sound like you're acting like we're not 4-7.
Well, I'm just doing the math.
I know, but it's like Coach Bull said after the game in his press conference. He's like, I don't have it exactly right, but to paraphrase, he was saying we're only one game out. It feels like we're 10 games out.
Yes.
Which it does.
Yeah.
It does. And it's not the case. But I guess the flip side of that coin would be, okay, yeah, you're one game out, but you're 4-7. So
right.
You are playing like a 4-7 team.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not going to mysteriously win your next six games.
Right.
Right?
Unless you win your next
unless
six games.
Unless you do. But you can't. We can't stand here and say,
no.
I know that's going to happen.
Right.
Even though in
theory,
in quiet moments, if I'm thinking about it and I look at that remaining schedule,
it could happen.
And I think, it's not fair to say this because they beat us.
Right.
I feel like we're better than Atlanta.
Yeah.
We have to prove that.
Right.
Carolina's 1-10.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not taking them. We know from last year.
Hey, listen.
We're not taking them easy. And they, I guess we can talk about this now.
Yeah.
They fired their head coach, Frank Reich.
Yep.
That means they've made an in-season coaching change for the second year in a row and for the third time under David Tepper.
Uh-huh.
This time, Frank Reich lasted 11 games. I heard something today that it was like the shortest tenure for a head coach in like 40 years or something like that. It was he didn't make as long as Urban Meyer made.
What
and I like Frank Reich.
Yeah, so do I. I'm mystified by it. I mean, I'm not in their building. I don't know, but I don't know. I always ask this question if I'm managing people and I hired someone and it's not working out. I would always ask myself, what was it that made me want to hire this person?
Yeah.
Well, why did I, what was it that I said, yeah, this is who I wanted?
The reason, you know why, right?
Right. Because
they knew they were going to draft a quarterback.
Sure.
First overall, or they actually had to make a trade to make that happen. But they were planning to try to get a rookie quarterback, and they wanted a coach, a head coach, and then people around him who would be ideal for developing that.
And on paper, it looked like it.
Kind of. Yeah. I always thought it was a bit overhyped. Do you remember in the offseason, and this is not revisionist history.
No.
You can go ask the PR guys over there. I had this rant multiple times during the summer that this coaching staff in Carolina was being crowned as one of the best coaching staffs of all time. Yeah. Look at this amazing coaching staff they put together. Yeah. Why? Josh McCown had never coached before.
Right.
Idro Evero, great dude who we know from when he was here, and I hope he goes on to have a really – and he's still there.
Yeah, he's still there.
He had been a defensive coordinator for 1 year.
Yeah.
And they did well in Denver for about two-thirds of that year.
Right.
And then it kind of fell apart at the end. I'm not disagreeing that he's a rising star coach.
Yes.
But how do you call this the best – how do you anoint this staff as so amazing before the season and then in the last 11 games?
Yeah.
Josh McCown also got fired. Deuce Staley also got fired.
Right, which is not unusual because if it's his – you know,
they were his guys maybe?
Well, but you know, they did have a press conference. The Panthers did. The owner did.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he stood up there and took the questions.
He did. He didn't answer anything, but he took the questions.
That's what you're supposed
to
do.
Yeah, that was a good job.
It's what you or I would have done too.
Right. Well, one of the questions was, did you get, you know, did you pick the wrong quarterback? You know,
oh, he said definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they were saying, well, who made, you know, there was a report that the owners decided, David decided that who they were going to pick, which if you own the team, I guess I would have, I guess you have that.
There's no proof of this yet, though, by the way. These are reports.
Yeah.
Now, Frank Reich comes out now and says, I didn't want him, I wanted C.J. Stroud, then we'll have some evidence.
I don't see Frank doing that.
I don't either.
He already did a one-on-one with a columnist of the Charlotte Observer, and he said that his personal relationship with the ownership is strong.
Good.
And he understood. He's sorry he didn't get a longer piece of time, but he's not, you know. But
I wouldn't go out burning bridges either.
No.
I'm just saying it would be interesting if he did.
Yeah. Well, I find it also interesting is that depending on how his contracts are written, he's collecting money from the Colts and from the Panthers, and they're both guaranteed. So the question is your contract guaranteed no matter whether you work or not, or it's guaranteed unless you get another job? So
it probably, but either way, the offset language.
Yeah, either
the
way.
The Colts probably were not on the hook for a lot once he got hired by the Panthers, because they probably had offset language.
Depends, yes. Sometimes those contracts do, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But either way,
I think most teams are interested in getting offset language for high dollar contracts for a player or a coach.
And you know, for Frank, he was you know, the first quarterback for the Carolina Panthers when they were an expansion team, and you know, it's kind of like full circle coming back.
What?
Yep. Kerry Collins replaced him like 3-4 games in.
Yeah, they drafted Kerry Collins. Mm-hmm.
But he
got the first,
I believe,
three or four starts.
Yeah, he was. So kind of
not
like
often you're dropping football knowledge that I don't know.
He's gone full circle. But I
understand. He's gone beyond full circle now.
Well, yeah, I understand the frustration of, you know, you're 1-10, you're going to make a change. I just don't know if it makes great sense to make it in the middle of the season. The only thing I can think of is that if there's so much turmoil in internally that you have to make a move like that, and you don't know unless you're there. So, and I'm not, and you're not.
No, that's true.
And so now they become this, does the Carolina Panthers rally around like the Raiders did?
The new coach bounce.
You know, you get that.
I know.
Right,
I wish
us
they
against
hadn't
the
done
world.
It. I wish they hadn't done this right before us. Yeah, that's what Rondé said today. So would it galvanize them?
Yeah.
I thought that was a good word. The Raiders won their first two games after Josh McDaniels were fired. Little bit of difference there because it became clear from a lot of Raiders players' comments afterwards that they hated Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, well,
I doubt that's the way they felt about Frank Reich.
No. And I did like what Todd had to say.
It doesn't matter.
It don't matter. You know what? We need to take care of our business. Okay. We take care of our business. It doesn't matter what you do, you know.
Yeah.
And you have to go into those, you know, it's like he said, whether you're, you know, 1-10 and or 10-1, we have to make sure we play our game. If we do our business, doesn't matter what you do if we do our business.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's what most coaches think. Is that always true, probably, in this case? Is that always true? If you have a team, if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you're about to play the Philadelphia Eagles this year,
yeah,
and you go, we don't care about them, as long as we'll be fine if we do take care of ourselves. Is that really true?
Well,
is Arizona's best effort going to beat Philadelphia's best effort?
That I don't know, but I will say their best effort beat the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, they're still crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean,
and Carolina's one win came against Houston,
whose rookie quarterback was killing it. Yeah, was their last loss until last week,
which they lost to Jacksonville. But that was a great game,
and they lost it the last few seconds because a 58 or 59 yard field goal didn't make it. So, you know.
And yet Philadelphia can hit a 59 yard field goal in the rain in overtime.
They scored something like 21 points or something in, you know, in the fourth quarter on something crazy. I mean, or 20, it was something crazy.
Isn't it crazy that we are not knocked off our chairs anymore by like a 58 or a 59 yard field goal?
No. In fact, if you don't make it, what is wrong with you?
I wouldn't go that far. I'm saying when a guy lines up for like a 51 yarder, you now expect him to make it.
Right. Right.
You're surprised when he doesn't make it. I don't expect a guy to make a 59-yarder, but I'm not surprised.
Right.
I mean, Matt Gay, he hit the upright, right, on a 58-yard drop this week. But that ball would have been good from 65 if it was down the middle.
He was kicking those during warm-ups. So guys, we were watching that.
So, guys, you know, 59-yarder in the rain. You have to have it to force overtime, and he makes it. That's still a pretty amazing feat.
Yep.
But we're all like, 59-yard field goal. Saw it yesterday.
Yeah.
Been there, done that.
You know, the wind's blowing. It's cold. It's, you know.
Last year, the Bucs played the Panthers. It was their second game after they fired Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
I think they had just traded Christian McCaffrey.
They did.
And were starting P.J. Walker at quarterback. And were, I think, kind of banged up. And I remember being on your pregame radio show before then and trying to talk about it like it wasn't a foregone conclusion.
Right.
We were 3-3. They were 1-5. We still had Tom Brady. They were starting P.J. Walker.
Yeah.
And they just kicked our asses.
Yeah, I remember.
21-3, I think.
I remember talking to Carolina radio, and they were all going, this is going to be a blowout. This is going to be a blowout. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. And they were right.
You have to say that.
They were right. It was a blowout. This is the wrong side.
So you can't take this team lightly, and now again they're coming off a change at coach. Will they rally around him? I think it's a little different than last year because I think it was more like Josh McDaniels. I don't think Matt Rhule was particularly well liked in that building, and so they did like Steve Wilkes. So when he got a shot, they rallied around him.
He won 5 out of 6 games, something like that.
They won 6 of their last 11.
Yeah, so there you go.
So it's just.
It's amazing. Well,
they went 6-6 overall with Steve Wilkes as the head coach, but they weren't interested in keeping him.
You know, it feels like it's been a long time since we played at Raymond James Stadium.
Yeah.
It just feels like
we've only played there once in the last 5 weeks.
And we're going to play there one time, and then we're on the road again for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Six road games in an 8-week span.
Yeah. This is, you know,
weird.
Very strange, but you got to win your games at home, and we won the last one at home.
Yeah,
and
pretty
so
handily.
It would be very nice to get it again. And then as the way the stars have been aligning, the Buccaneers, if they can pull off a win, and then Atlanta and New Orleans loses, it's a three-way tie in the NFC.
Atlanta was at the Jets this week.
Yep.
Obviously, the Jets have had their struggles, but they still have a great defense.
They do.
So you never know.
Yep.
New Orleans is at home but has a tough draw.
Who they have?
The Detroit Lions.
Oh, yeah.
I know they stumbled on Thanksgiving, but that's a good team.
That's a good team.
What was I going to say? Before we stop the Panthers and
Buccaneers
head coach thing, I just laugh when I see these articles about, and sometimes it's just headlines and I don't even read them because I don't want to. The fact that the Panthers have fired head coaches in the middle of the season, two straight years, and have gone through, I think, six coaches under their new owner.
Yep.
They're like, who's going to want to coach there? Who's going to take that head coaching job?
I'd go.
Give me a break.
It's one out of 32.
If you're saying, hey, Sean Payton's available and he can pick and choose Bill Belichick, an established coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. They might go, nah, I'm going to wait for the next opportunity.
Right.
Everybody else that gets hired is like a coordinator. Like the Eagles, both their coordinators got hired after last year.
Yep.
Those guys aren't going to turn down the job. It's your chance to be a head coach in the NFL. And by the way, probably make about $5 million a year.
And what's even better is there's no place to go but up. So you can be a hero.
If any team is going to pay me $25 million over 5 years to be a coach of a football team, I'm taking that job because those contracts are guaranteed.
Hey, did you see the rumor that Greg Olsen wants to... He'd be interested in being the head coach?
The tight end?
The tight end.
Not the former Bucs offensive coordinator?
No, the tight end announcer for Fox.
He'd be interested in the Panthers job?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Greg Olsen's a sharp guy, and I also think he's pretty good on broadcast.
Right.
But was that really the route you want to go?
I don't know.
They're going to want somebody, just like they did a year ago. If you take a quarterback with the first pick in the draft, every other decision you make for several years is based on maximizing that decision.
Yes. And you traded away a draft pick to move up.
Oh, they traded away several draft picks, my friend.
Chicago's all excited right
now. They got a two this year. I don't know who they used it on, Chicago. They got a one from they gave Chicago a one next year, which right now would be the first pick in the draft.
Yeah, that's a hard go, right? Yay,
and
Chicago.
I think they also got like a two in 2025. So
it's good news, bad news. The Bears have got a first-round pick. The bad news, oh, no, what do we do with the pick, says the Chicago Bears.
If they have the first overall pick, they're taking a quarterback.
You think they're going to give up on Justin Fields?
I don't know if it's even called giving up. It's just like, can you do that? If you have the first pick in this draft, which has two very highly regarded quarterback prospects, can you really justify saying, we're not going to do that, we're going to try one more year? Because you don't know when you're going to be in that position again.
That's true. Well, hopefully you're not in the number one pick position, because that means you're losing a lot.
Yeah, but in this case, they could be winning and still have the number one pick.
Well, that's true. And they won last night. Barn burner.
That game. I have never seen so many screen passes in one game in my life. Wow. It was getting to the point where it was insane, like, no way, they're not throwing another screen pass.
Yeah,
screen pass.
I don't know if they realize the rules are you can throw it down the field. I don't know if it's there yet.
Justin Fields finally hit one, I think, to DJ Moore towards the end that put them in position for the game-winning field goal. But for the most part, it was just...
An ex-Bucks. An ex-field goal kicker for the Bucks.
Cairo Santos.
Yes.
It's funny because the Josh Dobbs story, I mean, their offense was terrible, too.
Yeah.
Josh Dobbs, Kirk Cousins gets hurt. They trade for Josh Dobbs from the Cardinals. He comes right in and they win a couple games and he plays really well. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, see, this guy should be a starter in the NFL. It's funny because when he was first there, he didn't know the playbook. And so a lot of the plays, when they start to break down, he just take off and run.
Right.
It's almost like the fact that he's learning the offense more is making him less effective as a player, as
a
quarterback.
I'm so confused.
I mean, he's obviously a very smart guy. We know all the rocket science stuff.
Sure.
Well, one other way that the dismissal of
Frank
Reich could impact this game this weekend is now that Thomas Brown, their first-year offensive coordinator, is going to get the play-calling duties back.
Oh, that's right. Frank took it away from him.
Frank had it, then gave it to him for three games, and then a couple weeks ago took it back.
Yeah.
But now it will go. They've said it's going to go back to Thomas Brown because the head coach was the former special teams coordinator. So
and Jim Caldwell is...
He's going to be
a senior advisor, so he'll be, and he has head coaching experience. So.
Yeah, with Indy and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way that it affects the game. That's a little more concrete than whether or not they'll get this new coach bounce or not.
Uh-huh.
All right, what do we got next?
I don't know.
Well, this is completely out of order compared to what we were talking about, but that was an interesting defensive lineup that we started with.
Yeah,
because we'd been wondering if Yaya Diaby was going to get more and more playing time, and thought that there were some rumors going around here that he was going to start this game, which would probably be him starting over Joe Tryon Chayanka.
Right.
But he did start the game, but so did Joe.
Yeah.
We started with three outside linebackers on the field, and Yaya was, I think, not – he was – I'm not saying he was playing defensive tackle, but he wasn't on the edge. Barrett and Joe Tryon were still on the edge.
Right.
He was a little bit more towards the middle, which is an indication that he's a kind of a versatile player. Right?
Yeah.
And I know he's strong and good against the run. But more telling than the fact that he was on the field was that he played the most snaps of all the outside linebackers, more than Shaq, mm-hmm. quite a bit more than Joe.
Right.
Actually, Anthony Nelson played more than Joe. He played the most.
Right.
So it's just come to the point where they're like, we got to put him on the field. He just makes impact plays. Yeah. I can't think of a big Yaya moment in this game.
Did he have a couple sacks?
No, that was two games ago.
Oh.
Kalijah Kancey had a sack, and so did
Joe. Joe had a sack.
That's right.
Joe came around and got it.
Mm-hmm. So between Kalijah and Yaya, one of those guys is making an impact player or two every single game.
Speaking of sacks, Baker Mayfield, I think he got hit.
Six.
We get six, yeah. I didn't even realize that until I was looking at the stat sheet, and I'm like, oh, geez.
This is right along the lines of what I was talking about earlier, where problems are getting fixed, and then other ones are cropping up. Last week against Tennessee, San Fran, the four times he got sacked was the most he'd been sacked in a game all season, and now it's six.
Right.
And he's been sacked 13 times in the last three games. Before that, the Bucs were like second in the league in sacks allowed per pass play, and now they're down to like fifth,
right.
And now that's a problem.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Tristan's 100%, so there's that, and that makes a big difference. But I would just happen to think of the durability that Baker's been showing.
Yeah. Well, we'll see this week. This will be a test.
Oh, yeah.
Because like he said, felt bad at first, started to loosen up.
Right.
But then, you know, everybody knows who's had, like, especially an ankle injury.
Well,
sometimes you keep playing and you're fine, and then the game ends and you take the tape off, the adrenaline ebbs, and all of a sudden,
Well, the good news is the MRI proved negative, so that's a positive.
So no ligament damage.
Yeah, so that's good.
He's very sore.
I bet that he's very sore. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no.
I thought you were going to bet whether he's going to play or not.
No. I just know that it's like anything else. You hurt yourself and I'm okay. And then the next day you go, oh, that's not too bad. Then the third day it's like, holy smokes, what did I do?
I wonder how much swelling he has. Oh. I did see him in the building today walking around a little bit. So I'm not going to say I really paid attention to him.
No.
He was walking well, but he didn't.
He didn't walk, didn't have a boot on.
Yeah,
you didn't go, ooh.
I think. Actually, I didn't see.
No.
I doubt he had a boot on.
Usually you notice that. Even if you're not looking, you notice it. What?
Well, anyway, if I were a betting man, I'd say he
which you're not and you don't.
I'm not because I can't.
Right.
He probably fights through it, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
I'm not
tapes it up and plays.
Yeah. He's gonna give it a shot. He's going to give it a shot. I did find it interesting that they had Kyle Trask all the time. It was they kept him warmed up on the sideline every time.
He
was constantly up throwing the ball when
interesting.
Which was very smart. That's what I was saying. Is don't wait until you need him to come in when you think something could be wrong. You keep him ready.
Back on Yaya because I wasn't done with that.
I'm sorry.
And more even than the fact that he played the most snaps there, the Bucs put out their new depth chart. They put a new one out each week, and sometimes there's no changes.
Right.
There were quite a few changes this week, and one of them was that Yaya is now listed first.
Really?
Ahead of Joe. Yep. See?
All those highlighted parts are things that changed,
which I'll talk about here in a second.
All right. So... Okay. Ryan Neal's back, huh?
No. Well, part never changed.
Okay. The yellow or your orange is...
that's not Ryan Neal. Here, what? Give it back.
Yeah. Explain it. Yeah, okay, I see your lines.
Yeah. Well, this one is because Rakim Jarrett was there, and he's on IR, so he's gone.
Right, he's gone.
We all know that Aaron Stinney has replaced Matt Filer as the starting left guard, but now they officially made that move on the depth chart.
Okay.
With David Wells also off and back to the practice squad, they, for some reason, moved Payne Durham from behind Coe Keefe to behind Cade Otten.
Okay.
And then they switched the last two running backs. So Sean Tucker's back to third and Keyshawn Vaughn is fourth, which makes sense because Sean's been active the last three games and Keyshawn is not.
Right.
Now, Sean hasn't gotten any carries or offensive snaps, but at least he plays on special teams.
Right, which is important.
I told you we added J.J. Russell and Keenan Isaac because they got promoted to the active roster this past week. But the another interesting one is that they finally – D. Delaney had been listed on one of the corner – backlines, even though he was primarily playing safety.
Right.
And Christian Izian had been listed with the safeties because that's what he was known as in college.
Right.
But he's been playing nickel corner, slot corner. So now they switch them, and Christian's listed as a cornerback.
I think it's interesting that everybody talks about who's starting. And the way we rotate all the time, it just means you're starting. But it's not like back in the day where if you were starting, you were there all the time.
Yeah. There's a lot of rotation here.
Yeah.
And teams play a lot more nickel, too, because they have to, because opposing offenses play a lot more.
Right.
11 personnel. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Yaya officially, even though they like to call depth charts unofficial, officially listed as the starter. So his great rookie season continues.
Wow.
Do you know what I thought was weird? Did you guys in your radio booth think it was weird the pace that the Colts went on at the end of the first half?
You know what I mean?
They got the ball back with, 2 minutes left?
Yeah.
And they just didn't seem to be urgent at all.
And they were getting the ball after the half, too.
Yeah.
So they were, they had no sense of urgency at that point.
They got the ball with 1:44 left at their 20.
And we still could, when we had timeouts.
And did not call a timeout.
Wasted 20-some
seconds. Until there were 14 seconds left. It was 3rd and 10 at the 47. They had all three of their timeouts.
Yeah.
They didn't use any of them. No, I'm sorry. They only had two.
But they
had two.
Yeah.
They snapped the first play at 1:44.
Right. And then the next one was like at 1:20.
It was a 16-yard run. Didn't even snap the next one till 1:15.
Okay.
That's 29 seconds. The play itself probably took 8 seconds.
Yeah.
And then they didn't snap. Then they snapped again at 51, converted a 2nd and 8 on 3rd down pass. Now they're at their own 47 and didn't snap again until 26 seconds.
Yeah.
The first play started at 51, the second one, and they had two timeouts left at that point.
Yeah.
So they got to a point where they had just completed a 4th and 3 pass to Michael Pittman, but there was only 2 seconds left.
Right.
So they just basically had to try a 58-yard field goal. And I didn't know if you guys were talking about that in your booth or not.
Yeah, well, we were wondering why they were letting so much clock time go.
I mean, I was glad they did.
Yeah.
I just didn't get it.
Yeah, no, we did. We did, especially the one where it was like 29 seconds that they burned for no reason.
You can always just spike the ball.
Or just call your timeout.
Use your timeout. Yeah. So I'm saying after you've used your timeouts, you can spike the ball.
And oh, by the way, their field goal kicker's got a pretty strong leg.
Yeah, he made the distance.
There you go.
That probably would have been good from 56 because it curved and hit the ball.
Yep. He doinked it. Yep. No question. Which was, I don't know. Anymore, people get really upset that you go into the half with your timeouts, and I understand it. You don't get to carry them over.
Well, they did use them. They just didn't use them
properly.
Soon enough.
Yeah. Maybe that's their issue.
Okay. I don't know if you've heard me. Okay. I got on this rant again last week right here around the office.
What?
The NFL started a new rule, and it's actually only being used for 1 year, and then they'll decide if they want to keep it.
All right.
That you can, like in college, on a kickoff, you can call for a fair catch inside the 25.
And get it on the 25.
Get it on the 25.
Right.
And I was saying, why aren't teams doing that?
Because I don't think they understand it.
Through the first Bucks first 10 games, I'm not 100% sure of this, but my memory is that we did it once.
Right.
And our opponents did it once in 10 games. Now, if you take all the teams in the league right now, the average kickoff drive start, actually this was heading into last weekend, but I doubt it changed much. The average start of a drive after a kickoff was the 25.1 yard line.
Right.
You can achieve that just by fair catching it, and then you don't risk a fumble. You don't risk a penalty that makes you start at the 10.
Yep.
You don't risk a crappy return where he stopped at the 15.
Yep.
Just take the 25-yard line.
It's funny. Gene talked about that a couple times. Like, hey, why aren't we doing this?
There's been two kickoff returns for touchdowns this entire year. The average kickoff return across the entire NFL is about 22 yards. Uh-huh. So unless you're catching the ball at the 10, you're not getting past the 25 anyway.
Yep.
I get it if, like when we played Houston and Dari Ogunbowale had to come in and kick, and at least one of his kickoffs was kind of a line drive.
Yeah,
figure, okay, I got time to get up some speed here. I get that. I'm not saying never return it.
Right.
But almost never return it.
Correct.
Just, you won't get injured, you won't fumble, you won't get a penalty that makes you start at the 10.
You won't
just
waste clock time.
And you'll be right where you would have been anyway
yep.
at the 25-yard line.
And you're saving yourselves.
It's clock time, too. I didn't even think about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there you go. You're welcome.
That's my rant. So in this last game, we both each team called one.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay, progress.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think it's one of those quirky rules that they, I just don't think the players remember it.
Well, coaches should be reminding them every time they go out there.
As you walk out, say, oh, by the way, if you're fair catching it.
If it's a high kick.
If it's a fair catch, because they make the decision.
Don't return it unless it's a low hang time kick.
Right.
If it's a good hang time or a great hang time kick, just call the fair catch.
What did you think about the almost not fair catch that everybody – wasn't that close?
I don't know. He was playing with fire.
Yeah, because that's a penalty. That's a penalty if you claim fair catch and then take the ball and run.
Well, why didn't he get a penalty then?
That was why the fans were booing. Yeah, that's why the Colts fans were booing because they
couldn't just say, hey, I was just running towards the sideline. Play's over.
Apparently he did, but that was a questionable –
He called it at the last second.
And then took – well, no, he had it, like, and then he pulled it down and took the ball and ran.
Yeah, but he called it. But it was really late.
It was a question, no question.
My theory was that he wasn't sure if they had given him the fair catch.
Right, and the fans, that's why they were booing and yelling. Yeah. You know, always something.
Fans always think the call is wrong when it goes against their team.
Absolutely, it is. There's no question. That's how it works. So anyways – what else you got?
Did you see? Well, I guess we could talk about Carolina a little bit.
Well, we can save that. I want to know your elevator story.
It's not that great of a story. Well, it's just that there's – if you've never heard us talk about this before, at a lot of stadiums, there are certain elevators where that are – so there's a coach's booth, right?
Right.
And half your staff or whatever is up there. And they want those guys to be able to get down quickly to the locker room after the game.
Correct.
So most stadiums will have an elevator or two where they've got it. You can't get on if you're not a coach. They've got it blocked off. They wait for the coaches and they go down. So if you're a media member or something and that's the only elevator, you just have to wait.
Right.
There was a set of elevators right by the press box.
Right.
That's what we came up. It also emptied out very close to our locker room.
Yeah.
But they were very slow. There's like 9 floors and they would commonly stop at all of them.
Yeah.
And so I knew of another elevator that was past your radio booth. If you kept going and going almost all the way to the end zone, there was 2 more elevators down there because they have an auxiliary press box by the end zone.
Okay, because they had a Super Bowl there.
So I'm like, okay, I bet you I could go down there. And that'll be faster. So I did, and this is I left like 2 minutes left.
Right.
I left right after the fumble that ended the game to get down to the locker room and the press conference room. I get there to those 2 elevators, and they're holding one of them for coaches. I don't know why there were coaches down there too, but there were. I guess the Colts coaches went that way, and maybe the Bucks coaches went the other way.
So they don't share the elevator.
So there was only one elevator, and it took about 8 minutes to arrive. And then I get on, and it's stopping at every floor. And then we get down, like we were on like floor 8, and it stopped at 5.
Right.
And there was one straggler of a coach who hadn't made the original group, so was on our elevator and wanted the elevator operator to take it straight down. Which she should have.
Which you're all about.
Yeah, that's what I wanted too.
Yeah.
And it goes down to 5, and then suddenly, for some reason, it goes back up a level and opens up again. And there's people at every floor that want to get on, but we're packed, so they can't. So that whole ordeal, it probably took me 12 or 13 minutes to get down to the locker room. I did make it in time to get to Baker's interview, and then but it was close, man.
No, it is. That is a very, very. that is.
It's a hard part of this job. Trying to get down to the locker room.
They
quickly.
Don't have a lot of a lot. Unfortunately, some, you know, most of the time, it's not just a press elevator. Some stadiums will have just a press elevator, but this particular thing, it's an everybody elevator. Now there is a freight elevator to the other side, but this is also a suite holders elevator. Because it stops at the street level,
and then
the last place you stop is
event level,
which is the locker rooms underground. Right. So yeah, no, that particular stadium, I've learned to know what elevators are fast and slow in each stadium. But you're right, it is frustrating, and you're just trying to get it done. And
ours at our stadium, it's not really that big of a deal because the elevators that the coaches go down. Are the suite elevators.
Yes, and there's six of those.
And most of the people trying
Maybe
to...
Maybe eight.
No, there's three.
Three? Where are the suite elevators?
There's three. No, there's no three on each side.
Okay, that's correct.
Think of the lobby. Can you picture the lobby?
Got it.
The people that are... Most of the people that are trying to use those elevators are suite holders or people from the... with club seats.
Yep.
And... They're just as important as anybody else, but they're not necessarily in a huge hurry.
Right.
So it's not that big of a deal if they have to wait a few minutes. Whereas if you're trying to get to the locker room or the press conference room, sometimes it can be kind of nerve-wracking. Yeah. Oh, I've actually gone down the stairs on the other side a few times.
You really want to go.
I didn't enjoy that experience, though. Anyway, that wasn't a great elevator story. It sure is. It wasn't the Superdome.
No, but it made you think of the Superdome. You longed for the Superdome after that.
Look at this that I found on the play-by-play.
What's that? What did you do?
Right here. Look right here, right where my finger is.
Fries?
Look at the name above it.
Oh, French fries.
French fries.
That's the Indianapolis Colts.
I don't know. It might be pronounced freeze, but their starting center out, the center for the game was Wesley French, and the right guard is Will. It's spelled Fries. So right here on the play-by-play, it says French Fries. I told Max that this morning when I discovered it, and it took him 2 seconds to find a picture of them standing together.
Yeah, that's
Somebody
great.
Took it off.
Yeah, I'm just saying that you never can go wrong with French Fries. So
I'm betting it's pronounced Fries, but it could be Fries. Who knows?
Not on the Salty Dogs. He's Fries. I'm sorry. We're changing your name.
I think I'm done, man.
Yep, you got that much.
See my notes here.
A little bit of Carolina Panthers again. This is a big game. It's we got moved from 1 o'clock. So
you're
in the Bay Area, don't look at your schedule. Well, if you look at the Bucs app, the schedule will have the correct time. But we are at 4:05.
If you printed out a schedule earlier this year, you have to adjust.
I did that. I reached out to my counterpart to grab one of their people to do our pregame show. And I wrote, need him at 10:45 and da, da, da. And he came back and goes, you mean 1:45? Oh yeah. That would be it. That would be the reason.
Yeah. We got flexed. Yeah. I think we talked about this last week though.
Yeah. We don't. So, but anyways, it's a big game. It's a game that
it's a big game for us.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's, you know what, when you're 1-10, it's a big game for them too.
But it's not necessarily the biggest game on the schedule for the network.
No.
That would be my point.
Right. And what time does everybody else plays at 1? So we'll know.
Do they? New Orleans and
Atlanta. Atlanta, they play early?
I think so.
Okay. So there's that.
So Mike Evans gets the two touchdowns, right? That gets him to 90 on his career. 90.
Yeah.
He's the 15th player in the entire history of the NFL to get to 90 touchdowns.
How does he get to 14?
He has one more. Tied at 13th right now is Devontae Adams and Isaac Bruce.
Two more. He's getting two this week.
Well, Devontae is still playing, so he could conceivably also improve his total.
All right. Well, Mike's going to get three, though.
Oh, so that would make him tied for 13th with those two if Devontae doesn't get any more.
Yep.
But he would at least be tied with...
That's pretty darn impressive.
Isaac Bruce. It's amazing the names. Every time he takes another spot up, it's like another Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it is.
But a lot of people don't remember that Mike Evans also scored on a fumble recovery in 2018, I believe.
Oh.
So he has 91 career touchdowns, which is about, I don't know off the top of my head, 36th or something, because we're talking all touchdowns.
Sure.
So you got guys like LaDainian Tomlinson, like that.
Yeah, running backs, yeah.
But the group that Mike is tied in right now, for total touchdowns, listen to these names: Devontae Adams, Isaac Bruce, Tony Dorsett, Edgerrin James, Bobby Mitchell and Ricky Waters.
Wow, too bad you don't have any good players there.
Wow, man.
I know. That's great company.
Tony Dorsett and Edgerrin James.
Yeah.
You scored as many touchdowns as those guys? Ricky Waters was a fantastic player for a long time.
Very much so.
The and company that he's
keeping
now. You're
talking about Tony Dorsett. I mean,
Tony Dorsett.
They were winning back then, too. So, you know, holy smokes.
As far as Carolina, there's an interesting vagary in their rankings. You'd probably be surprised to hear that Carolina ranks sixth in the league in defense.
Really?
Allowing 304.5 yards per game.
Wow.
However,
what about scoring?
They're 30th in points allowed.
Ooh.
26, which is more important, obviously.
How does that work?
I guess from looking at this, you would deduce that, one, they're near the bottom in turnover differential.
All right.
At -7, so they've probably created some short fields for opposing offenses. So, you know, you get a 30-yard touchdown drive, you don't get a lot of yards, but you get the points, right?
All right. There's
and then also the fact that their red zone defense is second to last.
Mm.
So when teams get down there, they almost always score a touchdown.
Okay.
But that's a weird split.
Yeah, very strange.
But it does indicate they do have a pretty good amount of defensive talent.
Uh-huh.
Brian Burns is very good.
Yeah,
Derek
they do.
Brown.
Their core is pretty strong.
Frankie Louvu has turned into the next great Panthers linebacker. They've always had great linebackers. Mm-hmm. This guy kind of came out of nowhere last year. I think Jeremy Chin's been on IR, but he might be coming back. They should be getting J.C. Horn back from IR pretty soon. They've got some talent on defense.
Yeah.
They probably need some more pass catchers. Adam Thielen is first on the team with 77 catches, although he's only averaging 9.5 because they're really just not getting the ball downfield much.
Right.
The next guy on the list has 28.
Wow.
Like there's two guys. One's a receiver, one's a running back. So they don't have a great second option beyond Thielen, and Thielen's only averaging a career-low 9.5 yards per catch. So I think it's fair to say they could use some more pass-catching talent on offense, and they probably will be addressing that this offseason.
Yeah.
But when you talk about Derek Brown, Shai Tuttle's pretty good, Brian Burns is good, Frankie Louvu's good, Von Bell is good, Dante Jackson, they've got some good players on defense. Troy Hill, the safety. The Bucs aren't just going to walk over this team.
No. Nobody has.
Hopefully they beat them.
Yeah,
I'm not claiming I know they will, but they're definitely not just going to walk over them.
You got to take care of your own business, and you got to play the game. And that seems to be the message right now is take care of business. Let's get it done.
All right. You ready for some emails?
Okay. If you're ready.
You didn't seem sure.
No, I am. I'm just kind of stretching there. I stood a lot. I stood the whole game this game, so it always messes up my back.
Well, last week we read a question from our friend in Brazil, Alexander, and he was saying he made kind of a cute wordplay about how the Bucs were refusing to hit their quarterback. I thought he meant they didn't sack him.
Yeah.
But he says, "Oh my, I forgot to wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving." This came in on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and do remember Thanksgiving is an American holiday.
It's not a Brazilian holiday.
Yeah, no.
So it's nice of him to wish.
Yes, thank you.
And about hitting the QB, I was referring to a play where Purdy was running to the sideline for a first down, and three Bucs players, I recall Josh Hayes being one of them, running towards him but not going to the tackle, you know? Anyway, I can't picture that play in my mind, but I'm sure they were trying not to draw a penalty.
Correct.
Although nobody was throwing the penalty in that game,
as
we discussed last
week. Yes, we did.
All right, this one is from Patrick from Land O'Lakes.
Mm-hmm. We know where that is.
This could be a first-time emailer.
All right.
I don't recognize the name or remember
it.
Ahoy. I hope you both had a great Thanksgiving.
I did.
When sitting at the dinner table and thinking about what I am most thankful for, at the top of my list had to be the fact that the Bucs were in the NFC South. It is such a weird feeling as soon as the clock hit zero on Sunday and the Bucs had officially gone 1-6 in the last seven games that the first thought that went into my head was, well, we're still only one game back from first place in the division.
I like how he thinks.
I consider myself an optimist, which can be a blessing and a curse.
Uh-huh.
But honestly, he said that, not me. But I honestly believe the Bucs could go on a run here in the upcoming weeks and could be 7-7 by the Christmas Eve game with the Jags. That would mean wins. I'm interjecting here. That would mean wins over Carolina, Atlanta, and Green Bay.
Yeah.
The latter two on the road.
Yep. Yeah.
My question to you all is, of all the issues that have hindered the Bucs during this stretch, what, in your opinion, is the thing that needs to be corrected the most or the quickest? I think one of the biggest issues is costly drops, especially in the red zone. I know it was just outside, but from the camera angle with his speed, I felt that drop by Trey Palmer on that post route in the second half could have gone for six had he brought it in.
Yeah.
Enjoy listening to your podcast, and since you did, thanks for reading this. Patrick from Land O'Lakes.
Thanks, Patrick.
It's kind of hard to pick the biggest one, right? Yep. I would have said no running game.
Yeah, but now we got
but
one.
You had a great, had one. You had a great running game in that game, and it didn't change the outcome. We haven't had too many turnovers. We had a big turnover problem.
Yeah.
Red zone, I guess, right? Red zone offense?
Red zone offense is
you got to score the seven.
Yeah. And I don't know how you fix it, but not concentration, but it just seems like someone takes a turn of being out of place. And Jack Barrett was talking about that, which is you know, you got 11 guys on there. One person messes up on a play and changes everything. So
I don't think this isn't a bad choice by Patrick. Drops have been an issue.
Right.
Especially if you consider both sides of the ball and not holding on to interceptions.
Not only are they drops, but they're drops on big plays that your team needed at that time,
right,
which you can isolate out of 65 plays or whatever. Those few, you go, wow, if you would have made those. But that's the game.
Yeah.
You know? So, yes.
Tough to pick one, but maybe red zone for me. Red zone offense.
Yeah, I'm going with everybody stay on the same page. That's what I'm going
to say.
So
just an inability to go through a whole game without too many crucial mistakes.
Correct.
Okay.
Don't beat yourself.
All right. This one is from Don Little in Orlando.
All right.
Ahoy, ye old salty dogs. Mm. I was concerned that you might be short of questions after yet another loss, so I'm offering this email.
Thank you.
Winky emoji.
I like that.
This isn't really a question, but more of a follow-up to a past question, mostly for Jeff.
All right.
Sunday was one of those days for me, living in Orlando,
uh-oh,
where the Jacksonville Jaguars were televised on CBS over the Bucks.
Yeah.
As a result, I had to listen to the game on Bucks radio.
Well, thank you.
I did like Jeff instructed and went to Buccaneers.com on my PC and ultimately selected the 98 Rock Listen Live button. The radio stream worked fine for me on what surely was a blackout game in my area. I'm unsure if this bypasses the geofencing issues Jeff has discussed, but thought you might like the feedback.
Yeah. No. Well, what's interesting, and I'm glad you brought this up, is I found out through the league that if you come off of your desktop, it's not geo-blocked. So he would still be in. The good news is because if he was on the app,
yeah,
he would have been geo-blocked. But because he was on his desktop, it's so not.
Does this mean the guy in Germany that's asked about this could be
listening
to the games that way?
I believe so. So he needs to try it.
I think he wanted to watch the game, though.
Oh, well, that's another thing.
But it's better than nothing.
And what's happening here is we've had a number of games. This year, we have half of our games on CBS. So if the Jags are playing at the same time, the Orlando market is grabbing that game. Because that TV station can choose which one of those they take. Had we been just a Fox game, we would have made it. So that's very frustrating. And I'm sorry for that.
Okay. All right. This one's from Dan DeMaria in Palm Harbor.
Okay.
Ahoy, salty dogs. Hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving just like I did.
Good.
I want to give praise to Baker Mayfield for being a trooper and playing out a bad ankle and finishing the game.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
Also, I want to praise Mike Evans for another great game. He just gets better every game. Still six games to play and four in the South.
Yeah.
So there's still a chance to win the division.
Yes.
And make the playoffs. Right. My question is, who holds the Bucs record for most receiving touchdowns in a season?
Mm.
And who holds the record for most receiving yards in a season? And all I will say is don't overthink this, bro.
Mike Evans.
Who do you think it is?
Mike Evans.
It's Mike Evans.
Yeah. I started to run through different wide receivers, and then I was like, no, wait a minute. That's got to be Mike.
I'm going to get the exact numbers off the top of my head, and you can verify I'm not looking at anything.
No, I understand.
I think his record for receiving yards is 1524,
uh-huh,
and I think his record for touchdown catches is 13.
Right. And so the answer is?
1524 in 2018.
Okay.
And, oh, I was wrong. He had 14 touchdown catches in 2021.
Wow.
He had 13 in 2020 and 12 each in 16 and 14.
Wow.
Those are the four top. The next guy on the list is Mike Williams with 11 in 2010.
Uh-huh.
Those are the four top touchdown receptions seasons in team history. So he not only has the record, he has the three.
That's amazing.
Up.
Oh, I got one more thing with our buddy in Orlando. There is a radio station that carries it. It's the, oh. It's the, oh, gosh.
Wow. Good job.
Good job. I mean, I talked to...
Is there somewhere on the site where it lists?
Yeah. If you go to Buccaneers.com, it'll show you where it is. It's the game. It's
that's the nickname
that's
of
that's the name of the of it is it's the
104.2 game. The game.
Yeah, it's on an FM and an AM. Really,
where would this points. Be on our website? I don't know where this is.
Go through, well,
never
any,
mind.
Anyways, it's easy. It's the sports station in Orlando. There you go. How's that? It's called The Game. You'll find it.
Okay.
Just Google it and it'll pop up.
Great googly moogly.
Yeah. So, but you could listen to them in your car or, you know, if you're out and about, you're not tied to your computer. So that is the plus side about in Orlando. We have affiliates in Orlando. And
Daytona. Got them all over the state, don't you?
Yeah. Fort Myers, Gainesville.
96.9.
There you go. 96.9.
FM 96.9.
There you go.
The Game.
The Game.
So, yeah, Mike Evans is the all-time leader for the Bucs in touchdowns, touchdown yeah. catches, yeah. catches, yard, receiving yards, yards from scrimmage. Wow. The single-season leader in catches, yards, touchdowns. He's the greatest offensive player in team history so far.
I think you could go with that.
I don't think there's
yeah. –
as much as I love guys like Mike Allstott.
Sure,
and,
no, I got you. I got you.
Okay.
All right. What else?
Next question.
Yeah, next question. All right. Wow, they're coming in strong.
He finishes by saying, hope we win on Sunday.
Yeah, me too.
To get some winning mojo back.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Mojo.
Well, you can't have a streak unless you get one. Go.
All right. This is from Jerry in Maryland.
Okay.
I keep getting emails that are popping up in front of the emails I'm trying to read.
Oh, well, you're a busy man.
Greetings, dogs. Not the result we were hoping for against the Colts on Sunday.
No.
But I still have hope that we can win the South. I believe this team has the fight, talent, and depth to turn it around.
Right.
Great to see the young guys flying around making plays. Also loved seeing the all-pewter uniforms.
Yeah, I like that, too.
I like them, too. I will admit that I've heard some people who are not fond of them.
Really?
I thought those were pretty cool.
Internally or?
No, not
just,
internally.
Just outside?
Not definitely not internally.
They didn't like them. What did they like?
They just didn't like them, man.
Wow.
So my question for this week is based around that. I always thought that teams could not both wear dark colored jerseys. So, of course, the Colts wore blue jerseys.
Yeah.
Did that change when the NFL started doing the color rush games? Or was that never a rule and I'm tripping?
One time it was a rule.
Right. It did change because of color rush, right?
Yes.
Like, remember we played the condiment game where we were in all red and the Rams were in all yellow? Yeah.
The reason, and we've talked about this before, the reason why one team was in a dark uniform and one team was in a light uniform is because games were on black and white TVs, and that's how you could tell the difference between the two teams. So I'm serious. That's why.
I know. You explained that multiple times.
Yeah.
So I guess that...
That would be
it. I still...
Now with the advent of color.
But other than color rush games, teams do stick to that. So you're told at the beginning of the year what the home teams are wearing, and you have to wear the opposite.
Yeah.
So if we're going to play the Cowboys and they're wearing blue, we can't wear
now. Maybe red. they got away with it because they're wearing white pants. I don't know.
No, it's the jersey that matters. I'm pretty sure this is only acceptable when a team is wearing a color rush uniform. It did look weird. We talked about that before the game.
Yeah.
Me and some guys I was sitting there was like, this would look better if the Colts had white jerseys on.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that it was on the road and not at home.
That is weird, right?
Yeah, I thought that was, but maybe they couldn't. I don't know.
Anyway, next question is from Philip Schwadron, who's in California.
Okay.
Dear S-Dogs, what can a Bucs fan salvage from a 1-6 record since starting 3-1? What positives can we extract from such a disappointing couple of months? The answer is Mike Evans. Watching this guy play at an elite level for 10 years now, no matter what the win-loss record is our privilege to watch. He played as hard last week as he did in the Super Bowl, and he played as hard in the Super Bowl as he did in his 2-14 rookie season. I find myself celebrating his catches, touchdowns, and climb into the top 10 all-time receivers with as much enthusiasm as if we were 10 and 1. Keep on focusing on Mike, Salty Ones. This is a time for his individual achievement. Phil Schwadron, Woodland Hills, California. I'd like to be able to do both. Can we do both?
Yeah, I think it's time we do both.
I mean, we are celebrating Mike. I'm going to write, and we might even do a video, highlighting the catch, assuming he gets to 1,000 because he only needs 150 more,
yeah.
Which, barring injury, he will definitely make.
He'll probably get it this game.
The catch that sends him over 1,000 in every season. Yeah. I already pinpointed all of them. Some of them are more interesting than others. Like the one a couple years ago, was that the Super Bowl year? When he slipped on, he got to 1,001 right before halftime, and then he was throwing a pass in the end zone, and he slipped and hurt his knee.
Right.
And was out for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And it was a good thing he made it over on the previous catch.
Because it was
that would have been it.
Yeah.
But some of them, he goes by in week 11, and it's not that big of a deal. But anyway, we will continue to celebrate Mike. You can bet that.
Yep.
I mean, it's just good business. Because like Phil here, people want to hear about Mike. They want to think about Mike. They want to talk about Mike.
Well, you know, it's your team. And when your team's not winning, you want to find something to feel good about.
The silver linings.
And that is a silver.
I like it because you've been thinking for a few years that Mike Evans is Hall of Fame worthy, right?
Right.
But you don't know, is that going to happen? And now, when he keeps, like, passing Hall of Famers on certain lists, or
you have
them,
it's
like, is this even a question anymore? So it's nice to feel like there's no way he's not making the Hall of Fame. There's no way.
I don't know.
He's going to get to at least 100 touchdowns in his career.
How many articles did you write about Rondé Barber trying to get in?
He got in,
but
I didn't say necessarily make first ballot.
Okay, but
I had to write more about John Lynch. Rondé got in quicker than John.
Yeah. Well, there's another
not
example.
A lot.
Right.
All right. One more.
All right.
From Sam in Nashville.
Okay.
Dogs. Never thought I'd say this, but thank goodness for the Falcons for keeping the division from getting out of hand. He means because they beat New Orleans.
Right.
Even though it stunk that we lost, it was nice to see Mike move up the charts with two more TD catches.
I like that everybody's following that.
This is kind of a tough question.
All right.
You might enjoy this. Since reality has been kind of sad lately, I have a hypothetical question. I hope you mean that only in terms of football, Sam.
Yeah.
I have a hypothetical question for you both. With the news coming out of Sapp joining the Colorado coaching staff next year, is that a definite done deal?
Yeah.
Or is it just a rumor?
No, I actually spoke with Sapp, and
he is?
He's going to be going out there, yeah.
Keenan McCardle coaching the Vikings receivers.
Yeah.
He's been coaching for a few years.
Yeah, a number of years.
And Lynch being the GM for the 49ers. It seems like a lot of former players have continued their football careers past their playing days.
Right.
If you were thrown into an alternate reality and had to build a coaching staff from scratch, but you could only hire former Buccaneers players, what would your coaching staff look like?
Wow.
Let's say you can't use John Lynch since he would probably be our fictional GM.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for the great podcast, and let's go Lions, Jets, and, of course, Bucks.
Wow.
Okay, so who's the head coach? See, I always thought of Rondé as a GM type.
Yeah, I kind of go with that. I don't know who that is.
I'm gonna call an audible here and say Rondé's our fictional GM.
Yep.
And that means John Lynch is available because he's not our GM. Because I think he would make a good coach.
Yeah. He would make a good
coach. Because he's smart.
He's very smart.
And it seems like he wants to work hard.
Yeah. No. D-line, I would say.
It doesn't have to be like the best players either.
Right.
It's the guys that you think,
guys are pretty smart.
About Brad Johnson to coach the quarterbacks?
That's a good choice. He is very – or Tom Brady.
Tom Brady doesn't want to coach. Are you kidding me?
I'm just saying. But he said
he could be the head coach, maybe.
It didn't say who wants to. It said if you had a team.
So you're going to pick a guy that doesn't want to coach to be a coach?
It's hypothetical world.
And hypothetically.
It's a different, reality of. He just said, he didn't say who we thought wanted to be coaches. He said, who would we pick?
Yes, and I wouldn't pick a guy that I know doesn't want to be a coach.
Okay.
That seems, I guess Derek Brooks, could he be your head coach?
Yeah, he's got the talent.
Would you think Dave Moore would be a good coach?
Dave Moore would be an excellent coach.
He knows the game well, so he could he just coach the tight ends?
He could. Well, he could be. He'd be a good head coach, believe
what
it or not.
What about Paul Gruber?
No, O-line.
Yeah, let's give him the O-line.
Give him the O-line.
Tony Mabry's a very smart man, but he doesn't seem like he would want to coach.
Right. Warrick Dunn, running backs?
For what reason?
Because he's very smart.
That's true. I don't want my silence to make that seem like I was disagreeing.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was just a thought process there. Now, your halfback would have to be Mike Hallstatt.
Your halfback?
Yeah.
What do you mean your halfback?
Don't they have halfbacks anymore? No.
Halfback is just the same thing as a tailback or a running back.
Well, but it used to be a person who was just a halfback. Continue.
They were called that based on where they lined up in the backfield. So,
right. But there were some guys that specifically all they did. Continue.
Nobody's called them halfbacks in years, dude.
Okay, but this is not reality right now. You keep forgetting this is fantasy land right now. Keep going. Who else you got?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good head coaching candidate. I'm looking at this list of players of our best players. Doesn't have to be our best players.
No. You have to say guys that were really, really football smart.
I mean, I guess since Keenan McCardle is already a receivers coach in the NFL, I would choose him.
But do you – I mean, a head coach
– Who's gonna have the gravitas?
Yeah.
That's why I think Derek Brooks could be.
Sure. Bring the troops together. Yeah. I like that. That might work. I'm just trying to think of guys that were teachers as they were players. That's kind of where you have to go with that. That's a hard question, you know. Who do you remember who played but also, you know, helped other guys out? Was a good teammate in that aspect?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just having a hard time to come up with an answer.
It is. It's very, very difficult. I don't even
know. You know a guy who was always very concerned with wanting to be a leader?
Who?
Gerald McCoy.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
And he's also very smart.
He is.
He could be a head coaching candidate in this hypothetical conversation.
Yeah. There's possibility there. Wow, that's a good one, too. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's something that you would have to kind of just really, as other people are naming names as we're
Joey
talking.
Joey Galloway?
Oh, Joey Galloway would be excellent.
I think he'd be a good, from a personality standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And he's a, you know, again, a football guy. He's doing it on TV now.
I don't think we're going to sit here and fill out an entire 20-man staff.
No, you can't.
We don't have all day.
Well, we would have a small staff because we want rooms on the airplane.
Yeah, because we're running the show now.
We're
running the show.
We're going to streamline it. And, you know, I think that's an interesting question because if you look at the Detroit Lions, he has more former players as coaches than I think anybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What about Chris Godwin?
Oh, well, yeah, there.
I mean, he's still playing right now, so he could be a player coach maybe. Yeah. But
wow.
That's one of the smartest guys around. Very. And I feel like he'd be a leader.
Yeah. Very even.
But also a hard worker, so methodical. That would rub off.
Yeah, very methodical.
I think he could speak in front of an auditorium full of players.
Oh, no question. No question. But, yeah, interesting. That is a good question, though. I mean, that's something that
I don't know how well we've answered.
That could be a bar question. You know, you're sitting and having a couple beers and just rattling it off names. And
I just don't
about
know.
It.
I don't know if I've hit upon the
well,
right.
What about
head
Doug Williams?
Yeah, but I mean, he went into personnel instead of coaching.
True. That's true.
Although no, he did coach at college level.
Yeah,
obviously. Well, head coach.
Yeah, Grambling. Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely an option.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, those are the things that...
I'm just randomly looking through the all-time roster.
Yeah,
now.
You're cheating. You're looking at it. I'm just thinking of...
I'm cheating, am I?
Yeah, because you're looking at
it. I didn't remember that there were rules to this.
Well, yeah, well, that's right. It's an alternate reality.
Apparently I'm cheating.
Yeah. Well, you're just not using your brain like you always do.
I can't remember all 1,200 or whatever it is players that have played for us. I'm trying to jolt my memory here.
Is that how many have played for
something
us?
Something like that.
Is it really?
I don't know, 1,300.
Yeah, in all the years.
In all the years.
But, yeah.
No, all right, I'm giving up.
I am too.
I think we've given some decent answers.
I think that is the question that continues to give answers because everyone's going to have an opinion.
That is the question that continues to give answers.
Yes.
You maybe should just stop talking now.
All right, I'm done.
Because these words aren't coming out right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does.
That's our last question.
Is it?
We've answered it adequately, if not wonderfully. So I'm done.
I did too. I'm out of here. Since you did. Thanks for listening.